Hi, I'm Dr. Elizabeth Sanders, a foot and ankle surgeon and assistant professor at Boston University Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Katrina Sanders. I'm a registered dental hygienist, consultant, international speaker, and wine lover.
And we're sisters. I grew up looking up to my big sister, Katrina.
And now I look up to my lady boss, physician sister, Elizabeth.
Together, we are working to unite the dental and medical communities in unique and exciting ways.
Welcome to Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters, our monthly podcast,
where we unpack all things health related from your mouth to your toes.
So grab your flossy flops
and slide on some flippy floppies.
And let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Floss and Flip Flops with your favorite sisters, the Ginger Sanders sisters.
Yes. I never know if
we're, are we like Sanders sisters? Are we Ginger sisters? Are we, I mean, we're both,
we're
right?
All of the above. Well, I love it.
Which I love. I love it. Happy spring.
Yeah.
Happy stepping into the month of March and all of the wonderful accoutrements that come with spring and everybody being Twitter-pated. I got to tell you, I am feeling quite Twitter-pated today. Is that a word? Can we use that as like an adjective? Twitter-pated? I'm going to use that as an ad. I'm Twitter-pated over patient safety because the month of March is Patient Safety Awareness Month. So I'm ready to like dive into this because.
So Katrina, I just want to say though, I have this really annoying thing that I have to do today.
Okay. What's your annoying thing you have to do today?
So I work for this, you know, I work for a university hospital system, and every year we get these modules, and you know, today I'm supposed to do the modules on patient safety, and there's absolutely no way that you can make this exciting. There's absolutely no way.
Oh, contraire.
I'm probably just going to do click, 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 click. And at the end, it'll be great.
Yes.
Unless you know someone who can make it very exciting.
Well, it turns out patient safety can, in fact, be exciting. So buckle up, buttercups. We're doing it. I'm so excited to bring to the microphone my dear friend, like truly dear, dear, dear friend, the amazing OSHA lady, Karen Daw. Karen, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome.
Aloha. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, she starts with aloha. Okay. I love this.
That.
So I got to tell you, I was about to share this story. And then I was like, you know, why don't we just start by hitting record? So I believe the first time I actually met you and was in your orb was at a dental speakers event. And there was this like competition where you had these up and coming speakers. They would deliver like a 10-minute little thing about whatever their topic was. And I'm looking at the list of topics and it's like infection control and patient safety. You know what I mean? And I'm like, snoozer. And they're like, oh, and this woman, Karen. And I'm like, okay, here we go. Karen is going to get up here and talk about patient safety. Like, can't wait for this. Right. I'm like about ready. That's the part where like, you know, when you're at a concert, like the Backstreet Boys concert, and it's like the one song you don't like, and you're like, now's the time when I'm going to go use the bathroom. You know what I mean? So I was like, I'm about ready to go because I'm like, I'm just going to refill my wine glass. And then she opens her mouth and she starts talking about patient safety. And I'm like, hold on. This woman is funny. This woman like talks to me like this is real. Like, listen, I'm in your offices. I see this stuff all the time. I've worked in dentistry for forever. Like, I know these things are happening, you guys. But let's talk about what's actually going on with your patients. Come on. And by the end of it, everyone is just like, wow, how did you take this like ridiculously dry, seemingly boring topic that we know is important? We know patient safety is important, right? Do no harm. We can sit here all day and we can deliver care to our patients. We can talk about all the amazing things that Dr. Sanders does when she's removing toes and feet and, you know, addressing ulcers or whatever. But if we're not focusing on the safety of the patient first, we know we're not really being truly prudent providers. So it is important to know. I hope everybody, you know, that's my disclaimer. This is an important topic. But to your point, Elizabeth, and you're correct, it really is kind of like a drag for for dentistry, especially. And I'm sure in the medical space too, because it just becomes that thing that you just have to check off. It's like, all right, I did my patient mm-hmm. statement. I've got my CE for it. All right, I'm good for another 2 years, whatever it might be. And here comes Karen Daw, the OSHA lady, who blows this content out of the water, actually makes it enjoyable and delightful, and creates transformational change. Because people are sitting here and going, you know what, you are, why do I do it? I shouldn't be doing it this way. How the heck have we gotten down this rabbit hole where this is what we're doing when this is incorrect? So I will tell you, from there, I walked up to you afterwards and I was like, I got to shake your hand. Like, you don't know who I am. I don't know who you are. Right?
You totally did. Yes, did I? You did. I still remember that to that day, because that was the very first time Vanessa Emerson pushed me on the stage. And she says, originally it was supposed to be just a spotlight. It was a 3 minute thing. I was like, I can talk for 3 minutes. And then she said, well, we had a speaker drop out last minute. We want you to go up there and do your thing. So I was up with Catherine Eitel Belt, like,
oh my gosh, no pressure.
Doing an 8 minute. So we did from 3 minutes to 8 minutes, never spoke professionally before. I honestly blacked out. I don't remember what I said. I just got up on that stage. And then when I got off, I got a hug and everybody was like, that was fabulous. I'm like, I hope I didn't swear. That was the first thing I came up with. Did I say the F, like, did I mess up? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and like, cause I don't remember, I blacked out. But to kind of share a little bit about me, I was raised in Hawaii. So I was raised military. So we moved around a lot, but I was raised in Hawaii. So my demeanor, my personality is very laid back, very Pacific vibe, mm-hmm. right? But this mouth is all Brooklyn. This is my father's side of the family. So I'm like, so I have no problem with telling people and well, not telling, but asking tell. Is there maybe tasking? No, it wouldn't be
ask tell.
Ask tell. You know what I mean? Like, so people don't really like, is she telling me or is she asking?
Is she asking me?
Yes, exactly. So when I started seeing these things, and to go back even further, my father actually was in safety. So it's in the blood. If you want to look at it that way, it's in the blood. I kind of always knew I wanted to be in education. So I started off right out of college, fresh with a communications degree, 21 years old, got a job in the emergency department. And I was,
Wait, what? In the emergency, like, you're like, I'm a hyper communicator. You know where I need to go? The emergency department. That's ED. Where people...
High energy, fast moving. And that was my introduction into safety and infection control around patients and employees. And then from there, I was recruited into dentistry over at the Ohio State University College of Dentistry. So I was an instrument reprocessing.
Do you like how she says the Ohio State University?
Yes. That's
how you know.
It that way. The Ohio State. Anybody out there, please let us know. So that was kind of, it just, you know, I used to fight all the signs that I would get all the time. Now, I'm going to get a little woo-woo-ish here.
Okay? Yeah, get woo-woo. Yeah, let's do it.
Sometimes I think that, you know, these greater forces, much greater than we could possibly understand, are trying to tell you, this is where you're supposed to be. Why are you fighting it? Mm-hmm. And so when I was fighting it, there was dysregulation in my body. There was just imbalance in my life. And finally I said, okay, well, you know, I'm afraid to speak in public. I don't, you know, I'll talk to my girl. Like, we could talk like this all day, right? Elizabeth mm-hmm. and Katrina. Mm-hmm. I could do this, especially over wine. You give me some vino, I will tell
Heck
you.
Heck yeah, girl.
My deepest, darkest secrets. Absolutely. But it was like everything kept leading me to education and speaking in safety. And I thought, okay, let's just take a deep breath and just do this. Let's just do this. And so that's kind of how I got into this, to be honest with you. So I'm a big fan of looking for signs, like just trusting. People are like, well, how do you know it's a sign? I'm like, what does your gut tell you? Like, do you have something coming from your gut? Right. That just trust that intuition, trust that. And so that's why I got into safety. And I knew that I have sat through my fair share. You guys know this. You sit through infection control. You sit through OSHA. You said this, Katrina. People are like, I already know this stuff. I'm just doing this because I have to do it for renew my CE, or I need to renew my license and have so many CE and infection control, or it was just mandatory. I got to do this every single year. You're not going to tell me anything I don't already know. So I had to already approach this with some self-depreciating humor, right?
Like, yeah,
I know you all get this. I know it's not the same.
Yes. Topic. You've had a heart around this date for a year. You're exactly. So excited
like,
about
you
this.
You guys made sure you cleared your calendar. You were going to go to Disney, but you found out it was OSHA training day. You canceled your Disney trip, right? To be here with me. I get it. So one of the first things I do with the audience is I tell them, you know, when it comes to your safety and patient safety, this information I'm going to give you, it might be a good refresher. I'm just repackaging a little bit differently, but I'm just asking you to not just be here physically with me, but be here with me.
Yeah.
Be here with me. Be open and receptive to this information as if you are brand new out of hygiene school, brand new out of dental assisting school or dental school, and you might learn something new. And so it kind of gets people to go, okay, she's a little bit different than the other speakers that just kind of launch into a bunch of jargon that I already, you know, think I know. And then we have fun with it. And it truly is a passion of mine. I think you,
Katrina, it is.
You're an amazing speaker. When you find somebody who is passionate about the topic, it shows through. They're not trying to sell you on anything. They're not preaching to you. They're just talking to you like, we're just friends. And I hope that you take something out of this time that we have together, because time is something we cannot get back. And this,
yes,
you're giving me the investment of your time. I want to make it worth your while.
That's beautiful.
I love that. I'm so glad you're making it so exciting, because it's just this daunting task, really, to have to go through these modules. And I know you work mainly in hospitals and private practices. Can we kind of go through, let's say that I ask you to come to my private practice and to help me with OSHA compliance.
You better make sure you clean your stuff up first before she walks in. Just saying that. Just clean your stuff up.
No, and that's the protocol.
Don't clean anything because
okay,
let me ask you guys this.
Yeah.
So let me tell you a story. I was gifted 1 year the gift of a housekeeping service. So I'm not gonna say I'm like all bougie and like I have housekeepers like come over and clean. No, like it's a gift, like it is a treat when I do this. I do this like a couple times a year. So like come over, clean my house from, you know, top to bottom, right? So when I was gifted this the very first time, they were coming in the next morning. What do you all think I did the entire
night? You cleaned everything.
You organized everything.
You cleaned for the cleaners. Yes.
You got to clean for the cleaning lady.
I don't know what compelled me to do it, but everybody I talked to is like, yeah, I do that too. And so I tell them, like, well, I know that you want to clean it before I come in. Don't, because I need to get a true snapshot of what it's like in your practice. You're paying me to find something. Trust me, I'll find something. Even if you do clean, I will find something. That's what you're paying me to do. But it's not a finger wagging thing. It's about identifying those gaps. What, you know, here we've identified, now here's what we're going to do about that. So if I, you know, I come into the office, don't clean up. But one of the things I even do before that, it's kind of like a little bit of an intake process to find out what the culture is like in your practice. Does the safety coordinator have the support?
Do you have a safety coordinator?
Yeah. Do you have a safety coordinator? Yeah. Number one. Yeah. Right. How many people don't, or it's the dentist and and that's one of the mistakes I made early on in my business was I wanted to control everything. I wanted to do everything. I felt like I had to. And as soon as I let loose the reins, I was like, oh my gosh, it's so nice to outsource some of this stuff. But to also make sure they understand what I need.
Yeah.
So that I can trust the process.
Yeah, you're spot on.
Yeah. So I tell a lot of the dentists, I'm like, you know, you need a safety coordinator. You know,
you're not.
Yeah, you're putting out fires. I mean, you can get into this to run a business. You wanted to take care of patients, doctor. So let's appoint somebody and let's set them up for success. Let's train them. Let's educate them. Let's give them the tools that they need to be successful so you can trust that it's being done. You can trust that it's being done. And so that's ultimately my goal is when we talk about culture of safety, it's more than just pointing somebody to check off the boxes. It's about getting the leadership in place and then getting the buy-in from the team.
I love that. You know, I think it's important. Let's kind of dial back to patient safety and you know, it's interesting. So I've got an infection control course. I am no Karen Daw when it comes to infection control. And honestly, I will tell you, it makes me physically sick every time I have to present this course because I'm like, ugh. I take a little bit of a different approach when it comes to infection control. My course is about looking at a historical spectrum over time of like, these are the societal norms. These are the things that happened throughout time that taught us in medicine, because I do believe as a dental provider that I'm a part of the medical community. I'm just like maybe a specialty of the medical community, right?
You for saying that.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Yes.
So I am a specialty, but so inside of the medical space, like why do we like what happened that we decided to wear masks one day? Like what happened that we decided to wear gloves? Like, I mean, for anybody who was treating patients before the HIV and AIDS epidemic, and then afterwards, huge shift, right? And then we saw that shift happen again during COVID, that there are societal norms, trends, epidemics, pandemics, things that have happened over time that have taught society, like, maybe we should be doing this differently. Maybe we should be doing that differently. Maybe we should, right? And so my course goes into that. And it just kind of talks about, like, let's just be honest here. People are gross. Like, people are disgusting. Mm-hmm. I talk about the societal norms of what happened for the ease of the propagation of the bubonic plague, for example. Do you know that people, like, the reason why you call a swimsuit a bathing suit is because people didn't want the bathwater to touch their open skin. So they would wear a full like cloak to take community baths. Yep. Wow. And then when they would take a bath, they would take a bath in these clothes, and then they would take the clothes and they'd wash them. And they usually used a combination of soot and cat urine to kind of like break up any like debris that was on the clothes. So everyone's walking around smelling like cat pee, showering and bathing in these clothes, wearing makeup with lead in it, wearing wigs because everybody was getting, you know, various forms of critters in their hair follicles and all of that. I mean, it's an interesting thing to see what those societal trends were. And then as they start to recognize, maybe we should be doing this because this is going to help protect us from getting sick. It's incredible to see how we've adapted that into medicine and dentistry. So one of the biggest epidemics that really started to unfold what was going on, particularly in the infection control space, which is where I know you spend a lot of time, was the puerperal fever observation that was happening in Europe in like the 1600s. And it was interesting. It was noted that women who gave birth in hospitals and the birth happened in the morning, that the women had a better life expectancy or more optimal morbidity and mortality rate. This is at the time when women would die in childbirth. Like that was quite common. And so it was discovered that if you went into labor and you gave birth in the morning, there was a better likeliness that you would survive versus if you gave birth in the evening. Well, it turns out they washed all of their equipment at night. So if you gave birth in the morning, you got that fresh, clean, all of the, you know, equipment, people washed their hands, they had wiped down the rooms and everything. Like that happened at night. So now women are like, I don't know, trying to hold it or whatever. I don't know what you do. Like I'm gonna wait till the morning. And from there, it was recognized, well, wait a minute. I mean, these reported death rates were so overt that it was like, we have to take a step back. This is the 1600s. So what is the difference between the morning and the evening? And they're going back and forth. And finally, they realized, oh my gosh, we're using clean equipment. You know, we're using clean stirrup, whatever, all the things on these women in the morning. Maybe when it was getting to the point where women wouldn't even go to the hospital if they were in labor at night. They were scared to go in. You know what I mean? So this is where these concepts of patient safety, infection control, and really, I think it's important to think about some of those historical references, because when you get into that hustle and bustle and the day-to-day, you know, I think we forget where these processes came from. Like, why do we need to make sure that not only does the indicator change color to indicate that it has been in the, you know, appropriate amount of temperature over a spectrum of time, but we also need to test those spores to make sure our equipment is working? Well, it's because historically, when we didn't do that, people died. Like, people got sick, very sick from this. And I'll tell you, Karen, it seems like the good stuff that happens, particularly in dentistry, is not well publicized out there. Like, you don't see, you know, Channel 4 News going, look at this dentist who just purchased this amazing piece of equipment to sterilize. But I mean, how many times do you hear, oh, this dentist is going before the board because they've been caught reusing needles. This dentist has been brought before the board because patients are now getting tested for hepatitis C and HIV and, you know, this over here. I mean, it's a difficult space that we have been in because of what the news has shared, rightfully so. I mean, our community should know what risks they're acquiring when they go into a dental office. But gosh, then COVID happens and that just like blows everything out of the water. So here's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. Tell me about what life was like as the OSHA lady during COVID.
Well, first of all, I just want to acknowledge the people who came before us. I love that you focus on history because people don't know why we do what we do. And sometimes we're talking about culture of safety. That's one of the things I come across all the time is like, well, why are you doing it that way? Well, that's the way we've always done it.
Right? Yes.
Or,
yeah, we love that.
We're not going to change any things because that's the way we've always done it. And we've never had any issues not wearing gloves. I mean, I've seen that in a practice where the team members, none of them were wearing, well, some of them wearing gloves with patients, some of them weren't. This is very recent, like within the past few years.
Wait, I'm sorry, what? Hold on, start again. So some team members are wearing gloves while treating patients and others are not?
Others were not. And on top of that, the doctor said it was okay for everybody to wear the same mask all day long. I kid you not. They wore the same mask all day long. Ooh. And so let's tie this back to what you're talking about this, the information that they found about these women who were giving birth in the AM versus the PM. You know, back in the day, a sign of a good surgeon was someone who had a lot of blood on their apron, right? Huh. So they never bothered to wash it off. So if they had, the more blood they had, the more renowned of a surgeon they were.
And
they
Can you imagine nowadays? No. Like Dr. Sanders, you walk in and like, hello, shalom. And you got like this guy.
Walking from patient to patient. Yeah.
This is the type of stuff that, you know, they didn't even think about. And so now I'm going, okay, well, we're not running around with bloody aprons on, but you're allowing your team not to wear gloves and you're wearing the same mask, which is in effect the same, but we're looking at cross-contamination now. And so, yeah, well, the story with that practice was, it was kind of like, the doctor was a very, very kind, well-intentioned doctor, had purchased the practice and inherited the team that came with it. The previous doctor there also allowed them not to wear gloves because they had not the greatest HVAC system. They complained about how hot it was. So the doctor said, if the patients are okay with it and you don't want to wear gloves, then as long as you got their consent, right? We weren't having discussions around herpetic Whitlow at this point,
No.
So as long as you got the patient's consent, then you can go ahead and not wear gloves with that patient. You just have to notate their chart. And so, and fortunately, they had a brand new hygienist in the practice, just graduated.
Oh, poor pumpkin.
I know. Yeah.
Dear diary, today's my first day of work.
And this is what I thought. And she said, you know, doctor, I'm a little bit concerned about some of the stuff here. You know, I know you guys think it's okay, but what if we, you know, I heard this girl speak and she, at the, you know, ADHA conference and we want to, you know, I think that she could really help us out. Let's hear what she has to say. And fortunately, the doctor was open to it. He goes, we get CE credit for it. Okay. So then I chatted with them and the rest is history. We were able to fix a lot of the stuff. They understood the reason. So I want to just acknowledge, thank you for talking about the history, about how we got here. We don't just make up rules willy-nilly out there because, you know, the authorities out there have nothing better to do, right? No, we rely on the expertise of the individuals that came before. So I want to acknowledge that. So thank you so much for doing that. And then to talk about, you know, some of the things that we do, you know, why we do what we do it now, patient perspective too. We have to think about what COVID has really put a spotlight on. And that's, what do the patients know? As a hygienist, I'm going to ask you this, Katrina. In your entire career, have you ever had a patient ask you, do you throw away the instruments?
Yes.
Between appointments? Every hygienist at some point in their career gets that question because they don't know. They don't know what happens behind the scenes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, do patients ever want to take the instruments home? Like they want to take my nail nippers home?
Question. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They want to take equipment home. They ask, do you throw this out? They ask, is that clean? Like when you open up a pack of instruments, they'll ask, is that clean? Which I will say, like when I get a pedicure, I'm like, is that clean? Like I'm looking for the indicator, you know, she's like, open up the pouch. So yeah, I get it. Yes.
Yeah. So I know mani-pedi, same thing, single use. Do they, some of them are just putting them in sterilization pouches. They don't even go through a sterilizer.
I know.
You know, people just think you hear
yes,
that sound.
Yes. You know. Clean, yeah, exactly. Right? Yep. Yep.
So yeah. So patient perspective is huge right now. And I think that, I think it would be a good idea for us as soon as they start asking questions, it's a wonderful time to share with them all the things we do behind the scenes to ensure their safety. You know, not only do these go through an FDA cleared sterilizer, but we also clean them, we package them, we keep them sealed until they're ready for use. You know how many times I've gone to practices where the instruments are sitting out and there's just that magical patient bib that's supposed to keep them sterile just yes. by covering up the instruments, right?
You mean a piece of paper is going to protect against all of the aerosols and things that happen? That's amazing.
Yeah. So there's, you know, we see that and then, so be able mm-hmm. to tell the patient, you know, we keep it, you know, it stays in here until it's ready for use on you. We test the water on a quarterly basis to make sure it meets safe drinking water standards per the EPA. You know, we disinfect all our high touch clinical and even high touch non-clinical surfaces with an EPA registered hospital grade tuberculosidal disinfectant for clinical use. The patients don't know this, but the moment they give me an in to talk about safety, I'm like, I'm there, because at the end of the day, what does the patient want to know? They just want to know, is it safe? Mm-hmm. Is it safe right. for me? Back during COVID, they were calling up practices and asking them, you know, is the hygienist that's going to be cleaning my teeth today, have they been immunized
right.
against COVID? And some practices got that and they weren't quite sure how to answer. And they would automatically go, yeah. well, per HIPAA, I can't tell you that. And
yeah.
Technically, it's not per HIPAA, but that's another conversation. Can you disclose it? Absolutely. I have practices where everybody was immunized and they shouted it from the rooftops. They said, absolutely. Our practice follows all CDC mm-hmm. guidance here. All CDC guidance.
Elizabeth, did you experience that? Did your patients ask you if you were immunized? Did they, I mean, what was that like for you on the podiatric side? Because I will say dentistry experienced an issue because our patients have to take their mask off in order for us to actually deliver care, which was kind of ironic.
That's very
because our patients would walk in, they'd take their shoes off, like no issue whatsoever, like take their shoes off, kick their flip-flops in the corner, like whatever. I'm sure you saw that a lot in Hawaii, Karen. But then they'd be like, do you want me to take my mask off? And it's like, well, that's going to help if you could take that off for me to do this procedure. But the idea being they're taking their mask off, right? Then we're generating aerosols. We are within a, you know, hockey stick's length from our patient, which is exactly the concern we had during COVID, for an extended period of time, longer than 30 minutes. And so because of that, we were at elevated risk. Did you see that as commonly on your side? Like what were some of the concerns or issues your patients had when it came to COVID?
Yeah, I wouldn't really have many patients asking if I had the vaccine, but they certainly wanted to make sure that we were doing the correct protocols. Mm. So certainly they, you know, people were very appreciative of the whole mask protocol. But of course you would get those patients who would be kind of disappointed by it and almost annoyed. But to be honest,
you mean disappointed or annoyed because they had to wear masks or they had to get their temperature taken or they had to fill out a screening form? Is that what you, okay. Yeah.
That's exactly yeah. right. Yeah. Or the fact that they do have to wear masks. For example, right now we are back to requiring, especially yeah. in clinical areas, that patients are wearing masks. So I would get patients a little bit annoyed by that. And of course, they would have their own, you know, political beliefs, but they wouldn't necessarily ask if the providers did. We did have the hospital administration, though, you know, kind of on us to make sure that we were getting the correct vaccine. And if we weren't, we had to sign waivers for it.
Yeah.
But beyond that, patients, no, were pretty receptive to it.
That's interesting.
That brings up a good point, actually, Elizabeth and Katrina. Do you think that, so if you have any administrative team members listening to this in the dental industry, do you think that my medical and hospital clients got as much pushback as my dental practices did when we implemented masking? And so it goes back to your point.
No, I don't think so.
I'm so grateful you referred to yourself as a one subset of the medical community. And that's something we all, and I hope that everybody listening, you get used to calling yourselves dental healthcare professionals.
Yep.
You are practicing dentistry in a healthcare setting. And I think that so often it gets lost in translation. Why does my hygienist need to know whether I'm HIV positive? She's just working on my team,
yeah.
Right? But you're at greater risk than the primary care physician who's actually treating them, right? And administering their medication. So there's a huge disconnect. And I think it's part of it is, again, goes back to patient perception around safety and our roles. And we should plant the seeds.
Yeah.
When we do with the medical updates, you know, hi, it's nice to see you, Mr. Smith. Any recent immunizations, medications, hospitalizations that I as your oral healthcare professional should be aware of?
Yes.
Simple, straightforward.
Oh my gosh. I love how you said that, Karen. And I love that you ask about immunizations because, I mean, and this is a topic for another day, because we're going to be chatting with Susan Cotton coming up. Stay tuned, buckle up, friends. But, you know, even talking about like the HPV vaccine and, you know, having an understanding about that, which we know is important on the patient safety infection control side. I love these nuggets you're giving. I want to go back to a nugget that you gave earlier, just so that our audience can hear it again. And that is when a patient asks, is that clean? Do you dispose of that? And you say, well, this is now a time when we can talk to the patient about safety.
Mm-hmm.
We have to pause for a second here. The patient is telling you what they're concerned about, what their motivator is, where their focus is, because patients are different. Some patients are going to sit down in the chair and they kind of don't care. And we got that. We got those patients that said, I, why do you have to take my temperature? Why do I have to wear a mask? You know, so we have those patients. I don't mean those patients, but they're those patients, right, yeah. Karen? So we used to call them the Karens of the office, but now we're not calling them the Karens of the office anymore because we love Karen. So we'll call them the Jan of the office or something, Jan. But what you do is you go even further to say, we have an FDA cleared sterilizer. Mm-hmm. This equipment remains in the package until it is used on you. These are important because this, I think, was a huge miss during COVID. I do not think that a lot of dental professionals recognize that when patients were asking, they weren't asking to be annoying. They were asking because they were scared, they were concerned, and that was a big focus for them. But there was one thing, and I'm going to borrow this from there's a little coffee shop, wine bar across the street. We take the dogs to sometime. During COVID, they had this sign on the outside of their door, and I love it. During COVID, it said, you will notice that we are, you know, wiping down our menus. You will notice that we are wiping down our tables. You will notice that we are giving you clean silverware and, you know, blah, 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 and all this stuff. But what they say is, we have always done this and will continue to do this. Okay, I love that, right? Because let's just be honest here. When COVID happened, we were all caught with our pants around our ankles, right? It was like, Karen, you got it, right? Everybody was emailing you, messaging you, texting you, calling you, sending pigeons with little parchment paper questions to you. I mean, any way people could get attention from you to get the information about, okay, so what level mask should I be wearing? What HVAC should I be getting? What should I do with this? What do I do with that? What do I do? And it's like, okay, hold on a second, friends. We have known that we generate aerosols. Like, that is not new. And I will tell you, it was September of 2019, and I did my infection control program, and I had a whole section about aerosols. And I said, friends, it's coming, because we've been so focused on bloodborne. We've been so focused on if saliva were red that we're missing the fact that there is an aerosol issue here. And I think this is going to be a big problem. So we need to start focusing on. And I started talking about HVACs, and I was talking about masks and all of these things because a company was sponsoring me to talk about it. And ironically, as it were, you know how this goes, nobody listened, nobody cared. COVID happens, now everybody's
now
listening.
People are listening.
Mm-hmm. Now everybody's caring. So let's dive into that, because this is an issue for me. When we say our oath and we graduate on graduation day and we promise that we are going to protect the health and the safety of the community, that means all the time, not just, oh my gosh, there's a global health crisis, and now the NIH is involved, and now the CDC is involved, and now the World Health Organization is involved. So now I'm actually going to care. All this other stuff you said before, I know that, but I don't know it enough to actually create change in what I'm doing in my practice. Karen, let's split that open. Like, where does this come from? How has that actually allowed for the propagation of disease and infection in other areas? What are we looking at on the horizon? Because I don't think COVID is an isolated incident. There, infections are infections. People are gross. People, I was just in Jazzercise this morning. People are sneezing and they're not covering their mouth. You know what I'm saying? Like we're back. We're back to what it was before. So let's pull this open. What's going on?
Yeah, I don't like the fact that we're so reactionary. And I do also want to highlight that dentistry, you know, we've been following the CDC guidance for decades now, and it has served us very, very well. And I love that you had the insight back in 2019 to realize, okay, that's great for bloodborne pathogens and spatter and spray, but what about souls, right?
I mean, right.
Why are more people looking at this? And so I'm so glad you were talking about engineering controls around, like, you know, HVEs and what can we do about air quality, et cetera. Where are we headed? Well, I mean, the studies show us that this is probably not the only pandemic. Some, I know, you know, I was receiving dental care. I was very young when dentists started wearing, you know, dental healthcare professionals started wearing gloves. My orthodontist was a smoker. I know this.
Oh,
I know.
You knew. So you had those like smoky fingers, like in your mouth, adjusting your wires.
The Dr. So-and-so's hands taste funny.
Ew. Wow. Oh, Karen.
So can you imagine if I told
no.
A brand new assistant, brand new dental assisting school, I said, go work on that patient without gloves on, they would quit, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's cultural, right? It's this, that we've moved the needle, it's acceptance. We've changed or reframed the discussion around that to where now it's the norm, right? That's mm-hmm. a standard of care, is that we're going to wear gloves and we're going to put our hands in somebody's mouth. And we know that COVID also moved the needle around some things too. Now we're focused on aerosol generating diseases. So where are we going after this? Well, we're looking at the science and it's showing that zoonotic infections are increasing, right? Mm-hmm. We are being exposed. We're coming across more viruses. We hear about, you know, different types of things cropping up all the time. Whether or not one becomes a pandemic or not, we don't know. But we can, as the healthcare community, we can drive the discussion around it now rather than waiting for something, the next big thing to happen, because it's going to happen. Yeah. I myself have lived through two pandemics now. HIV, AIDS, COVID, there's another one.
Yeah.
There's another, increasing exponentially, there's another one. We can continue to look at the science, follow what the experts are saying, make sure that we're squashing propaganda or misinformation when we come across it. That is our responsibility. Mm-hmm. As you said,
yes.
We took that oath. And it's more than just doing the stuff. I think it's also about educating our patients around awareness about what we do too.
You know, we're relying on the general public to interpret a lot of like this high level stuff that we learn. Elizabeth, do you remember it was in the early 90s? I think it was like 1992, if I had to guess, when cryptosporidium
mm-hmm,
was a thing. What do you remember about it?
Well, I remember them almost blaming it on like our diapers.
Yeah.
And, you know, and because actually I remember that there was a hill
mm-hmm.
in mm-hmm. Greendale that they made specifically out of trash. And whenever we would drive past it, we would always almost blame it on that. But that's
yeah,
what
it's
I
Crystal
remember.
Ridge. Yeah. I remember Crystal Ridge. Yeah.
It was Crystal, made out of diapers.
Crystal Ridge was made out. Yeah. It was like a little bunny ski hill thing. and it was, yeah, it was made out of like a landfill basically. And they like, you know, made it into a nice little ski resort area.
So our parents would always say, your diapers are in there.
Your diapers are in there. Yes. We are a part of history in Greendale, Wisconsin. Yes. Thank you very much. I remember that we were told that you couldn't drink any water from the tap water, which depending on what part of the country you live in, some of us like from the Midwest, like you would just drink water from the tap. Like I remember like water from grandpa's tap like tasted so good. It came out ice cold. It's from the Great Lakes. Like,
absolutely.
You know, but you couldn't drink that water. You had to boil it. And I remember Uncle Russ would just drink straight out of the tap. And I remember us being like, oh, it's kind of like as a kid, when your parents teach you that you, if you turn on the light in the car, when it's night out, that it's illegal and you're going to get pulled over. Do you guys all remember that? Like the car is going to explode. By the way, that's not illegal. Like I just learned that. Same thing. Like we saw him like drink water out of the tap and we're like, oh. So yes, it is a cultural thing, right? It creates that, but then like a pendulum, we almost kind of just swing back. And to your point, Karen, you're spot on. I think we have the burden of sharing some of this, like, you know, propagandized concepts, and let our patients know, like, we are here to protect the health of the general public. So, you know, you had asked earlier, yes, in dentistry, we got pushback. We got pushback from patients because we said, would you please be so kind as to wear a mask when you sit down in our reception area? Like that, you know, in and of itself, like if a patient was like, I have crippling COPD and I can't, like, okay, we would figure something out. You can come in through the side door or whatever. Mm-hmm. We'll come out to, you know, whatever. We would find a way to be reasonable and kind. But we in a perio practice, and I know Dr. Sanders, you do, you see a relatively immunocompromised patient population. They're diabetic, rheumatological, HIV positive, whatever. So, you know, we see that in perio too. So we've got an immunocompromised patient population sitting in our chair. We have to be careful. We have to protect. This is the issue. We talk about nosocomial infections and some of the issues and concerns of, you know, patients coming into a facility where people are sick. There is infection. There are infectious diseases everywhere, right? And so I think it's important for us to take that step back and recognize, how do we as providers become really prudent? So you're saying, Karen, we should really focus on maintaining this culture and these protocols we've established, right? Like, yeah. You've got these engineering controls in place. Hygienists, like, we all freaked out. We all told our doctor, I need a level 3 mask. Okay, I don't mean to say it like that, because yes, you do need a level 3 mask. But then just because the initial tracking of incidents of cases of COVID has subsided does not mean that all of a sudden you don't protect yourself from aerosols anymore, right? Yeah, so we have to be able to maintain those pieces, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, some of the science, you know, has been around for so long, you know, hand hygiene, proper hand asepsis, the simplest thing we can do to prevent the spread of infection. We know it's 15 to 20 seconds, 60% minimum alcohol-based hand rub, or soap and water if your hands are visibly soiled or contaminated. So that's me on the podium saying this stuff. Now, what does that mean for us and our patients? Well, when we're talking to our patients about stuff like this and reiterating to them, you know, it's important that you wash your hands, right? Whether it, you know, you're in a healthcare setting or our team members, whether it's in a healthcare setting or outside, right? Because the numbers are staggering around hand hygiene. If you guys had to take a guess between, and we're going to be battle of the sexes here, between the men and women.
Okay.
Who do you think are the biggest violators of not washing their hands when they're leaving the restroom?
Men.
Yeah, men.
Okay. All right. You guys didn't even hesitate, right?
Oh, yeah.
Majority of the audience would say the same thing. If you've ever been to for example, Ohio State, I actually walked into the men's room accidentally once.
What? Karen.
I kid you. Accidentally.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I had a few too many, and the lines are shorter, by golly. But yeah. The brief second I said, I told you guys are going to get the real me here. All right.
Yes.
I'm an open book. Walked in, and what do they do? They're all lined up and there's like a trough, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, and then to hear the study that came out of Michigan State University about hand hygiene, I was like, ew. So, and that's why that video you said, not washing his hands after going to the bathroom. So specific findings found 15% of men didn't wash their hands at all. 15% didn't wash their hands at all. When they did wash their hands, they just kind of splashed around in the water. 50% didn't even use soap. So they turned on the water, and to them, that was good enough.
65% of them are not getting soap anywhere near their dirty little nasties.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Let's see here. And then hand washing was more prevalent earlier in the day. This suggests that people who are out at night for a meal or drinks were in a relaxed mode and hand hygiene became less important, right? Mm-hmm. And so I always think about when we're trying to educate our patients and our team members on the safety concepts, they're like, yeah, I know, 15, wash my hands. Okay, all right, you know, and then I go, well, you know, there's some things that maybe there's a better way that I can explain some of these things that kind of make more sense. So I always include in my presentations, I always talk about, you guys are all foodies here, we're all healthcare professionals, but probably quite a few foodies. You both are mm-hmm. foodies. You like mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. So I go, you know, 2020 did a study on the top most contaminated surfaces in a restaurant. In the front of the house, not in the back of the house. So think front of the house. So what do you think made the top three list?
The sink.
See,
this is the front of the house.
Front of the house. Front of the house.
Oh, the front of the house.
Okay. So the door handle, like going into the restaurant.
Door handles were up.
The reception desk.
The check-in desk area.
Mm-hmm. Check-in desk. Because people love touching that.
Yeah, specifically menus. Menus
and then the menus
down, but not disinfected. Chairs were number one, especially if you always request booths. E. coli.
What?
E. coli.
I know. We know where E. coli comes from, so you can just imagine, right? And bed bugs. So if you're a booth, you like to see bed bugs. I know. Look, Dr. Oh, Elizabeth, you started scratching. Bed bugs. There's always the audience starts doing this number, right? It's so funny. So booths, tables and chairs, specifically booths, a high amount of E. coli, menus because, and salt and pepper shakers because, you know, they're constantly touched, but very frequently cleaned or disinfected. And then, do either one of you guys, when you got, do you drink your iced tea or water with lemon?
Oh, yeah. No. Don't tell me.
Okay. So I'm a frou-frou girly drinker. So when I have my adult beverage, the more umbrellas and.
Yes.
And
give me the little curl of the.
Exactly. Yes. The sparkler in it.
Twist. Like that's, yes.
That's what I want. So I'm a frou-frou girly drinker. And, you know, if you think about it, all the little food sit in that little white tray at the bar station, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so your server's fishing around for the least slimy bit of lemon to stick in your iced tea or your water. They found that over 50% of that fruit is contaminated with fecal matter.
I can't.
I know. So, I mean, I have to speak to folks in a way that they can relate. So here I am talking about infection control and proper hand hygiene, but making it relatable to them in the sense that think about when you go out to eat and drink. Yeah. I'm not saying don't go out to eat and drink, but what I'm saying is if you're going to order a drink during happy hour,
get a glass of wine, something that doesn't have a piece of fruit in it.
Or make it a double and hopefully the extra alcohol will kill
it. Just kind of cleanse it. Yeah, if it's over 60%, you're good, right?
And somebody in the audience said, I'm going to make a shirt the next time I attend one of your trainings and it's going to say, make it a double to kill the fly fruit poo. And I thought, make it a double to kill the fly fruit poo. I didn't think about that. Let's do that. Yeah.
Make it a double because the OSHA lady says so. That's what my shirt's going to say.
That's better.
it's a safety tip. I'm supposed to have twice. Maybe put that extra shot in there, bartender. But to be able to talk to people in a way that it's not so always so clinical because they gloss over it. You know, you lose their attention.
Yeah.
Many people will sit down and, you know, do a course online and they just kind of fast forward through everything and then answer 10 questions at the end. They go, oh, our office did our safety training for this year, infection control. And I'm like, you know, let's make it in a way that they can retain the information, right? We know the studies show live training, you can retain the information in greater quantities for a longer period of time to the point where ultimately it's doable. So let's have conversation around safety where it's not just, let's just talk about it. But what can we do about it? And just be really honest. Are you the type of practice that maybe you could use some outside perspective or outside help?
Yeah.
I think we also live in a culture when we're talking about safety, where everybody feels like they have to know everything or their boss is going to be upset with them. What a very toxic and very masculine energy, right? It's a very finite black and white. You're supposed to know it. You either know it or you don't, right? So I'm like, you know what? Let's be honest with you. You don't have to know everything.
Right.
I don't know anything about a complicated extraction. I don't know about, you know, removing a planner's wart, a really complicated planner's wart that's been there for several months. So could you use some help around safety and infection control in your office in a way that ultimately your team member will have, again, that buy-in and it makes sense to them? So I always tell people, don't feel like you have to know it all. You don't. That's what continuing education is about. I just got certified in all these things. I think I sent you my bio, right? I got certified in Reiki and hypnotherapy and NLP and fires technique and life coaching from a trauma-informed lens, right? Why do I do that? Because I do believe in the importance of continuing education, bettering yourself in any field, in any shape, whether it's personally or professionally, constantly learning. And I think that's going to help us to be more, to go to tie a bow around this, to go back to what you said earlier, be more proactive and not reactive is by staying informed.
Oh, I love it. I love it. What do you think, Dr. E? Do you feel like you got your learn on today about patient safety and about how important it is to take care of our patients?
I really did. And I think the biggest pointer that I took back from this, because I educate my patients so much on things that they should do. Like, for example, if they're going to get a pedicure, I'll tell them to make sure that they're, you know, checking to make sure it's sterilized. But I think the best thing that I learned is that I should be educating my patients not only about their health, but about the things that I'm doing and the things that they can do at home to help with infection control. And I think it'll go a long way. What is the biggest violation that you've noticed in any OSHA compliance?
Let's do like gross stories. Like give us your biggest violation, like craziest, don't no names, right?
Yeah, I love this. One office, I had walked in and they had the operatory, one operatory kind of quarantined off, not like caution tape, but they had like this crepey ribbon. You know what I mean? Like you would streamer, right?
Police tape.
So they had that kind of blocking off the operatory. And I thought, what's going on over here? And everything was covered in, you know, plastic barriers. And I thought, why aren't we using that operatory? You know, is that chair not working? Or was this? No. So the story is that there was some sounds coming from the attic, and it was a standalone practice. It was its own building. There was some sounds coming from the attic. It was little critters up there. The doctor, rather than hiring an official, you know, exterminator to kind of remove whatever was in there, maybe it was a rat, who knows, right? Bats, who knows? Rather than hiring a professional, an expert, right? Who knows what they're doing? He sealed off every nook and cranny he could find where these animals must have gotten into the attic, right?
And dentists are very good at that, by the way. They're very good at finding micro, you know, exposure and sealing that off. That's what we do with teeth.
That's what they do. That's what you do.
Very good
and
at that.
So after a couple of weeks, as you can imagine, the scurrying and the sounds stopped. Well,
so it's taken care of, right? We're done. We're good.
It's done. Well, an assistant is walking by that operatory and she's hearing this like dripping sound coming from the ceiling, like a plop, plop, plop. It was maggots falling. I wish everybody could see your faces right
now.
It was maggots falling from the ceiling out of the air vent onto the plastic barriers on the chair, on the dental unit. And so OSHA actually, when we talk about OSHA violations and infection control violations, there's actually a standard around vermin and infestations. So that would have been an OSHA violation. And obviously we don't want our patients exposed to, and plus the optics of that, right?
Ignore the maggots today. The maggots like top of the morning to you. Welcome to our practice.
It's funny that they had that, but they had this cute purple and pink crepey ribbon draped to block off the operatory. And it looked like there was like, they were about to bring balloons in or something and have a party. So that was probably one of the ones that stand out the most in my mind.
Wow.
Another one you brought up, sterilization and infection control. I think there's a huge misconception about the color indicators, the chemical indicators on the pouches when they change colors, that it means it's sterile. And I'm like, no, it's a process indicator. It tells you it went through the process of sterilization. Mm-hmm. So I only look for mani-pedis at salons where they actually do truly sterilize everything. Not just like in the barbicide. Barbicide's a good thing. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But if you're going to put it in a sterilization pouch, like just make sure that it is indeed sterile. That's gone through the process. So I actually found a place I was traveling. I was in actually Northeast Ohio near the Cleveland area. The salon next to the hotel I was staying at had on their front page, it said, our instruments are safe. So this is around the time of COVID. It said, our instruments are safe. And it had a picture of a tabletop sterilizer, like an M9 on the front page of their website. So I thought, this is fabulous. How many times do we know of salons that actually truly sterilize things or use single use, you know, the cuticle pushers or orange sticks or disposable, et cetera. So I go in there and I pick up one of the pouches, the chemical indicators have changed. I said, oh my gosh, this is fabulous. Can you tell me a little bit about how you clean and sterilize these items? And of course the girl looks at me like a deer in headlights, right? And I said, no. I'm very fascinated by this. You know, this is my field. Can you show me where this happened? She goes, okay. She shrugs and she goes, okay. So she takes me down the hallway, and there's a little curtain that separates the area where all the manipulations are taking place in the back of the house. And she slides over the curtains, and I'm expecting to see that M9 and maybe a little ultrasonic, right? And sink and a whole setup. No, instead I see a stack of sterilization pouches and an iron. It was, they were located near a hospital, and at some point some MAs or some nurses came in and said, hey, you know what, if you truly want your clients to feel like your instruments are safe, you need to clean them, sterilize them, place them in a pouch. These pouches have these special colors that change colors, these that when exposed to a certain temperature. So they're in their minds, they skipped the whole cleaning, sterilization. They were like, oh, well, we want our guests to know that.
Oh my gosh.
So we're going to stick them in a pouch where these indicators have changed colors. So that wasn't a dental specific violation, but I was looking at that. I'm like, that is so misleading. That is such a huge violation.
Wow.
Guests are thinking that you've sterilized these and you haven't. So we had a little infection control, mini impromptu infection control training session, whether or not they did anything about it. I don't
know. They didn't know who decided to show up today for a pedicure. Yeah. I always feel that when I get a pedicure with Elizabeth, I feel so bad for the woman. I'm like, I don't think she knows that this is like a super renowned podiatrist who's sitting here getting her toes done. Like,
I usually can't even tell them because then they'll probably be intimidated. Katrina always tells the person.
I do.
I feel so bad.
I do. Yep. Yep.
Doctor of podiatry. You know, she's a big deal. Do you know who she
is? She's a big deal, and she's watching everything you're doing. Well, this has been an absolute delight. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Karen, the OSHA lady, you guys have to check her out. She is on Instagram as the OSHA lady. And of course, we'll put all of her contact information in the show notes. Hygienicals, if you're listening to this and you think, gosh, I recognize that we have some opportunities to really help improve our patient safety and our practices, please connect with Karen because she is amazing. And she does a really great job of clarifying what's going on without, of course, making people feel bad. But if you do have maggots in your office, she does reserve the right to share that information on a podcast. Thank you very much. So this has just been amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, and yes, happy Patient Safety Awareness Month. Really exciting. Yeah. And thank you to all of our listeners at home for joining the Sanders Sisters for another rowdy episode of Floss and Flip Flops. Please stay tuned with us next month as we continue to brush up on all things oral systemic.
Oh, we promise to keep you on your toes.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us for another monthly episode of Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters.
Thank you for being part of the change we need to see in the medical and dental professions.
Join us next month for another sister-to-sister chat about other unique, interesting, and perhaps provocative and disruptive health topics.
Don't forget to like and subscribe, and maybe even leave a fabulous review.
And we'll catch you next month for another episode of
Floss and Flip Flops
with the Sanders Sisters.
I love you, Kinka.
I love you, Izzy.